in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today we're talking about Watchmen, not the Alan Moore, David Gibbons version, but animator Jake Hughes' take, because he is the one who proposed the project to Warner Brothers, and the result has been a new way to present the story and art to an audience pre-sold on the book and, of course, the soon-to-be Zack Snyder film in March. Jake gives us an in-depth behind-the-scenes look at the project from Dave Gibbons' involvement, the original musical score performed by a 50-piece orchestra, to the stirring narration of Tom Stick-Chulte. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where they feature a wide selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, absolute editions, original graphic novels, omnibus editions, free shipping on orders over $50. Speaking of Watchmen, here's some various products from InStockTrades.com. The trade paperback retails for $19.99, but at InStock Trades, you can get it for $12.59. The hardcover edition, retail prices for $39.99. At InStockTrades.com, just $25.19. How about the absolute edition? The retail price, $75. At InStockTrades.com, just $47.25. And don't forget about InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com for all your monthly pre-order needs. For all the details, check out their websites, Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com and InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Our conversation with Jake begins asking the question, how many animators are involved in the Watchmen motion comic?
There are probably about maybe 7 to 8 animators here in the U.S.
And you guys are all over the place, as you were just saying off the air, that you guys mostly communicate via Skype and Google Talk?
Yeah. In fact, it's crazy because like half of the people that are working on it, I've never physically met. I don't even know what they look like.
That's cool.
I'm so, you know, I mean, we're all so intimate because we talk all the time and we're, you know, we're checking up and talking about stuff. I mean, one of the great things about, you know, online chats is that you can actually be online for an hour and work together and just talk about stuff. And then sometimes you'll just go into 5 minutes of silence where you're just kind of, you know, working on things and you get sidetracked. But yeah, we're always talking.
Before we got started, you were saying that your first contact with Watchmen came through one of the other people that are working on the project?
One of my best friends, Rich, we were in Spanish class together in 10th grade, and we had developed this routine of sort of a boxing, but using art, so we would just constantly be, like, drawing over each other's art, and he was a much better artist than I was, but it was a very, very cerebral, fun experience. And then one day he just handed me Watchmen. And I had stopped collecting comics for a while, but I had, this was my first exposure. And, of course, I came back, you know, kind of glowing. He actually had two copies. He had his copy and the copy that he lent out to people. And so I wasn't the first guy that he had done this to. And I think his copy got circulated around my entire high school.
Was this the trade, or was it back when it was still a monthly?
Yeah, this was the trade, and it was the one that had the actual city on the cover.
Sure. Okay.
Back in the day.
All right, well, I won't date you, but what year do you think it was that you were exposed to Watchmen?
Got to be 87.
Okay, it was relatively soon after the monthly. When it was the first trade collection. Okay. You see, I remember it coming out monthly. Even as it was coming out monthly, I can honestly say it really was such a distinct book compared to what else was on the stands at the time. Did you have that kind of artist feeling in terms of, you know, the layouts and the way they were telling the story?
You know, I had a very cinematic experience, I want to say. Like, for me, it was the, because they were doing things like intercutting. And you could feel, you know, and I mean, I was, 16 at the time, so
okay.
It wasn't something that I could pinpoint. But, you know, like, you know when you're, like, you're either you're reading something, you're watching something, you're listening, and you're being sort of, you're being pulled in, and you know that you're being taken care of. And it's that thing where, like, you're halfway in the movie, and you're like, please don't suck. Please don't mess this up. This is perfect. I'm right in it. And that was what it was like, because you're reading it, you could feel there would be entire sequences that were without balloons. And you could feel the rhythm of something happening. And, you know, in one of the chapters that we were just working on, chapter 8, you know, even the way that it's laid out, it's got six panels, you know, three, and then one big one at the bottom. And you could feel that there was a tension that was being built. And, you know, 20 some odd years later, it's like now I'm starting to truly go like, oh my God, how did they do this? I just, you know, like it's just, you know, it just keeps giving is what it's doing.
Well, now, how did you get involved with this project? I mean, was it something that you applied for, or did people approach you and say, we want to do this? How did it all work out?
No, so I had I was working on a PSP game, the Sony portable device, for a game called Afterburner. My background is video games.
Okay.
And they wanted to do some cutscenes, you know, in between like the gameplay. They wanted to have little cutscenes, and the company Planet Moon that was doing it, they didn't have a lot of money, so they said, you know, they talked to me. I had some friends that worked there. They said, hey, you know, could you help us out? And my background, again, was kind of video games and cutscenes and storytelling and things like that. And so I kind of pitched them, well, you know, like, why don't you do like a kind of a comic book thing? Because rendering out in full 3D is really expensive, and the bar has been set really high. And so it was something much simpler, and we just basically animated a bunch of storyboards, and then they redrew the art to fit the storytelling. And it was really simple stuff, and it turned out really, it was great. It was a lot of fun to do. And when the job had finished, I sort of went, gosh, well, you know, as an experiment, you know, could I take pre-existing art and do the same kind of trick? And I thought, why don't I try my favorite comic? And so I thought, okay, well, page one is that, you know, it's the pullout from the button to the top of the building. I thought, okay, let me try it. And so just for fun, I took a few weeks off and just scanned in the Absolute edition and broke it out in a bunch of layers and did the shot. And I found a really great piece of music, and I did some sound effects. And I took it down to my burned a DVD, took it down to my two best friends, Brian and Rich. Rich being the guy that gave me the comic, and I said, check this out. And I think we all kind of got giddy, you know, going like, wow, that really worked. So that kind of fueled me, and then I did half of episode one just on my own free time. And, again, burned a DVD, and a buddy of mine who worked at IDOS, which I'd worked for in the video game world, he had sold the rights to Tomb Raider. IDOS was a Tomb Raider game, and he'd sold the rights to make the movie to Lloyd Levin, which they went and made the two Tomb Raider films. And Lloyd Levin was, of course, making the movie. And so I told my buddy Paul about it, and he said, hey, you should show this to Lloyd. And so I went down there, and I had this meeting with Lloyd Levin, the producer of the movie, and Zack Snyder and Debbie Snyder, and a whole bunch of people. Actually, it was pretty terrifying. There's about nine people in the room, and I was I got really nervous. But I put the DVD on and, you know, showed it to them, and they got really excited about it.
So was it done?
And they said, okay, do the whole comic.
So where are we right now in the Watchmen story, as far as the motion comic?
We're working on 8, 9, 10, and 11 concurrently.
Wow.
Yeah, we're doing them all. You know, one of the things that we're doing is we have a fully orchestrated musical score.
Indeed.
And, yeah, it's a 50-piece orchestra that they're in Prague.
That's amazing. And, I didn't realize that because, you know, I've talked to several producers of direct-to-DVD animation, and you always hear that the composer is really just, you know, behind a couple synthesizers and really doing everything themselves. So this is a fully orchestrated soundtrack. That's great.
Yeah, Lenny Moore. He's been composing stuff. He basically makes a version of it, you know, on a synthesizer.
Okay.
And then he sends it to us, and we all get, you know, our MP3s, and then we all talk about it. And then we do a satellite scoring session. And, you know, where they're in this little tiny garage in Santa Monica, and they've got these, you know, these 50 musicians and a composer, and they're sitting in a room in Prague, and they're actually scoring it. And so it's kind of like what you're saying, which is that it's kind of like this satellite world creation that we've been working on this. Like, you know, I mean, all of these guys working on these musicians, we never met, we'll never meet, and yet they're creating all this wonderful music. And then, you know, and it's all digital. It's all going through all ones and zeros. So it dawned on me many years ago that, you know how Dave Gibbons drew these panels, Watchmen, and he sold them? Did you know that? That he sold his panels? He doesn't actually own the original Watchmen art?
No, I didn't realize he sold the page work, no.
He didn't actually own the original artwork anymore. And, of course, you know, it's like, you know, like, dang it, sure would love those back. I mean, you know, he still knows some of the people that have them.
Okay.
But that his artwork exists as it's a physical thing. And, you know, everything that we have worked on the motion comic, it's all digital. It's sent through the internet. Nothing actually physically exists. Strange thing, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, almost a virtual version of this original art is, you know, being manipulated into new product and again, new content. At what point have you come in contact with Dave Gibbons? When did he come into the project?
So after a few months, Paul Levitz from DC had taken the DVD that I'd made to Dave Gibbons and showed it to him. And then Dave Gibbons came out to meet me and a couple of folks on my team, and we just kind of talked about it. And you know, I think he was a little, you know, he wasn't sure about it at first, because, you know, I mean, obviously this is his this is one of his things that he's known for.
Absolutely.
But he was really charming, and we had made a trailer, like a kind of a mock trailer, where we'd just taken some of our favorite shots.
Okay.
And we put it together to music. And for some reason, that clicked in him. He really liked the trailer, and that somehow changed him a little bit. And later on, he'd said that he was showing it to a bunch of his sort of peers and his family, and he wasn't sure about it, but it was... I mean, this is the story he told me, but he said that his son was really, really thought it was cool. And I really felt like that helped him kind of get excited about the idea of it. And again, I mean, you know, just meeting him was just like, oh, I couldn't believe it.
Was Watchmen the first thing of his that you had ever seen?
Yeah.
There you go. I mean, you know, and I think subsequently I've enjoyed his work and really enjoy his writing and his art. We always do fall back to Watchmen. I even found some of his earlier stuff that he had done for some of the 2000 AD comic books as well, things like Rogue Trooper. He's a great creator, and his art has got such a distinct, clean style. But it, as you said, it's the storytelling that makes Watchmen the incredible book that it is. How did you guys feel about putting motion to something that really, you know, became famous as a bunch of static images that, you know, put together, does kind of create its own motion and visual line. But now you guys are taking it a step further and really adding true motion to it.
You know, you said that the art is very clean, and there's a certain, you know, the line work. I'll tell you, he is, you know, like his understanding of perspective is, it's incredible, right? And we, you know how Scott McCloud talks about, you know, that what you read between the panels that you bring yourself into seeing in between the lines that are between the panels.
Absolutely.
You know, there is that is there, man. You know, it's kind of hard to explain, but like when you're looking at it, you can see what the motion is, and I think this is true, especially of Watchmen, and again, just in the way that it's laid out, that you can see what is supposed to move. Do you feel that?
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. So you kind of felt that innately it was already there in terms of how to animate these things and when to make the moves necessary. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, it really explains to you, you know what it wants, and there's obviously some things that we have a hard time with, like comedian's the soliloquy that he's got at the end of chapter 2.
Yes,
you know, that's 18 panels of one shot. That's something that is hard for us to move and to animate because he's in a different pose. So that whole scene became about, like, well, how do we get around, you know, how do we go switching between the artwork?
Okay.
And, you know, so we use the neon sign going on and off to help, hide the transitions of the art panels.
I keep comparing these motion comics to a group of comics that I'm a big fan of. And I wonder how you feel about them. The old 1960s Marvel superhero cartoons with Submariner, Captain America, Thor, the Hulk,
right.
Iron Man. And right. I wonder if any of that influenced your work in terms of, you know, what you've done with motion comics.
Gosh, that's like a fuzzy thing in my mind.
Okay.
I was kind of, a bunch of us, we're kind of bred on anime.
Sure, okay.
And one of the things that, sort of, like me and my buddy Rich, we studied anime very intently because what we learned from it is that they can, they're very clever at economy. They don't have a lot of time they don't have this giant staff to animate beautiful scenes, throughout. So, there's a real great anime called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which is one of my favorites.
Okay.
And the thing is like, they'll basically spend, 20 minutes on not a lot of animation, and then they'll just pour their guts out into, 30 seconds. And it's fantastic. It really taught us, that sometimes you just need a stationary, shot where you cut between two people talking, and that is enough to kind of, inform what needs to be told. And then you when you go to the more complicated shots, and that's where you pour the love into. And they're really, anime was really, really great at doing that.
Are there enough images big enough in Watchmen?
Sure, sure. I mean, we try to animate as much as we can within the shot. Like there's chapter 8, there was three panels of the city street, and we're dolling across the city street.
Okay.
We're putting a little bit of parallax in there. To kind of help it not be so static.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Dave Giddens did for us is he drew a bunch of cars.
He talked about that, yes.
We wanted to make sure that, every time we had a city shot, we wanted to have a bunch of cars going around just to at least, bring the city to life, to always, make the city feel alive. And if you look at the way he drew the panels originally, how he informed that was that he would draw the tail end of a car on one side of the frame, and on the other side of the frame, he would draw the front end of the car.
Sure.
Just to kind of say, there are cars here, but of course, we didn't have a complete car anywhere. And, we only had, one or two, and it was like, well, we don't want to have the same car, so we kind of asked him, very politely, hey, could you draw some cars so that we could populate the city. And 24 hours later, we had a file with like 10 cars in it.
That's great.
And I called him up and I said, you know, my God, that was so fast. And he was like, hey, man, if you're in the comic book, you know, world, if you want to work in the comic book industry, you got to turn this stuff out really fast. Okay, great, thanks a lot.
One of the ways that we got in touch with each other, and it's kind of a weird story, a friend of mine at the radio station that I work at was such a fan of the first chapter of the Motion comic. He was really impatient for you know, the second chapter, and I know he had emailed you and said, where's chapter two? How long does it take you guys to produce each chapter?
At first, what we were doing is we were having one person take on a chapter.
Wow.
You know, we just kind of like the idea that one person's responsible for one chapter. It's sort of one voice. You know, it felt like that's the way that it wanted to be. So we had guys that had started on, you know, chapter six and chapter seven very early on in the process. But then we started running. It takes a really long time to do this.
I bet.
We're having to pull out so much art. You know, I mean, like every time there's a balloon, you know, that art doesn't exist. And again, what you said earlier about how, you know, Gibbons's lines, that your brain just kind of, you know, you can see where the lines are supposed to go. It's very obvious. So, you know, there's a lot of time and effort goes into sort of, you know, going past the balloons. Anyway, we spent a long time on it. And then we had a problem with chapter three, which was sort of our cursed chapter.
Okay.
the joke was, you know, Alan Moore is a magician, you know. We were afraid that
the
there
curse.
Was some voodoo going on. we had a hard time with that chapter. And there was a lot of stuff going on. That was the first time that we got to the pirate comic. And we were doing something really tricky with the printing dots. And, we basically, at some point, we had to throw a bunch of people on it. So if a bunch of people are on a chapter, it could take, you know, 2 months maybe.
Wow.
Some of them took, you know, one person, you know, 5 months to do.
Man.
The difference right now is that when we were working on Chapter 8, and Chapter 8's got, you know, this pension building, you know, busting out of the, you know, the prison, the cops come to Dan's place, and, you know, it's a very, you know, again, it's what we, you know, we're calling the story episode, where a lot of the story moves forward, and then the next chapter is the character chapter. That's Chapter 9, which is what, you know, we're finishing up right now, and that one is all on Mars.
Yes.
And it's got, you know, for us, the challenge is that we've got the we're calling it the sand castle, his sand castle,
sure.
Glass castle, which it's got a ton of effects. We've got all of this Mars stuff. There's these, you know, it's got, and let me tell you, the pullouts really are tough, because we're having to go from some super small detail out to some giant, you know, pullback. And
sure.
Of course, Chapter 9, we start on the broken down Crystal Palace, and we pull out, you know, like, you know, millions of miles away, you know, as you know, we pull out from Mars and the Mars's moon, and oh my God. But it's completely different, because we're having to use all of these different effects and processes that are, we didn't use in Chapter 8.
So you guys are really learning as you go. I mean, I guess each as you say, each chapter is kind of presenting its own visual challenges, given that you're,
yeah,
you know, working from existing art. You said that,
yeah,
that Dave, you know, made the cars. Do you think there are going to be any other scenes that are going to require any more additional art from Dave?
I don't think so.
Okay.
He did a redo of the Minutemen photo. You know, in the comic, he's always drawing the Minutemen photo in the same way like the cars, which is that he never actually fully shows you the drawing. It's always either at some very, you know, large angle or you're only seeing one side of it.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that Who Watches the Watchmen graffiti, you never ever see it fully completed.
Yes.
It's always only half shown, so you kind of, you know, from going back and forth through the comic, you can actually assemble what it is that they're actually writing. But we tried to assemble a version of it from all of the different art panels, and it looked terrible. So we asked them, like, hey, could you just redraw that image? And of course, it was great for us because we're like, wow, we've got a full version of the Minutemen photo, you know, in its entirety, which is awesome.
That's great. You know, that is the fun part of this, seeing it as a motion comic versus the traditional way it was shown in issues and in trade, is this additional art. And again, what you guys are doing with it. And I know that fans of the book are thrilled. Are you getting responses from first-timers that this is the first time that they've been exposed to the story and this is the way they're first enjoying it?
My mother.
Okay.
I got my mom the Watchmen, you know, trade paperback many years ago. Maybe like 4 years ago. I got it for her for Christmas. I mean, she's a avid reader. And I thought, okay, try this. You know, and I gave her that whole thing of like, this is the greatest, and it was on the 100 best,
yeah,
you know, books of the 20th century.
Yes.
I mean, I really sold her on it. And she read the first chapter, and, you know, and I called up. I said, you know, what do you think? And she said the thing that she did really love was the Mo Vernon story that's at the back of issue one.
Under the Hood, yeah.
Where he comes out wearing the fake breasts and says, you know, Mo Vernon slept with my wife.
Yeah.
And burst into tears. And, I mean, that piece of writing, it is, you know, it's really strong. And I think my mom was moved by that. And, of course, it's like, of course she was moved by the text, but she couldn't drop into, you know, having the pictures there for her.
Sure.
And so I was kind of, you know, I was a little bummed out. Now she's watching all of the episodes as they come out. I don't know if she loves them because, you know, I'm her son. But, you know, so I don't know.
Have you guys gotten, I mean, have you been given access and told, I mean, how many thousands of downloads have been going on since this thing has started? Do you know?
I don't know. But
okay.
I think it's, you know, we're hearing that it's been very popular. Well, you know, if you go to the iTunes store, it shows you the, like, the rankings. And, like, in the sci-fi category, it was ranked, like, the number five TV show.
That's great. Yeah, up against other traditional, conventional television shows.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what that means, but it certainly made us feel pretty cool.
I think there is so much anticipation for the film, and certainly
sure.
the book sales have spiked since, you know, the announcement was made that Zack Snyder is making this film, and I'm sure that the trailer has only helped. I've certainly seen at bookstores tons of displays of Watchmen, so I think the book is selling out, and I think people are excited to, you know, get the story any way they can. And I really think this was a really smart move on Warner Brothers' part, and through your innovation and invention of presenting this to them, that this is a great way to lead up to the film. And people can experience the story this way and then, you know, enjoy Zack Snyder's film and see that interpretation of the story. So, I think it's wonderful, and it's exciting to give people something to look forward to because, really, God, you know, that trailer was back in July, I guess, during Comic-Con season. And, you know, people
right.
have to wait another, you know, year and a half or half a year plus before the film comes out. So this is great, and I think this is a great bridge to that eventual film release.
How many times have you read Watchmen?
Oh, God. You know, I'm one of those guys that likes to go back to it every couple years. And I haven't, to be honest, I've been watching the motion comic. I haven't cracked open the trade recently. I did buy Dave's book,
right.
and I think that's amazing, and it has so much wonderful background story in it. I never bought the Absolute Edition that DC just put out in the last year, you know, couple years, because I wanted to wait because I knew there was going to probably be more of you know, more things. And also, I just kind of wanted to savor it. And I just enjoy the story on its own so much. But I am curious to read those detailed scripts that Alan Moore has become so famous for.
Oh, God. You know, I begged Dave Gibbons to, like, send us the scripts. Yeah, we sort of went, hey, we'd love it if we could get a copy. That would really help us out, which it actually would have, because we missed certain things. I mean, we're looking so detailed. You know, we're looking so hardcore on each panel.
Sure.
And we find some detail that, you know, we thought, oh, my God, that's a reference to, you know, something, you know, six chapters earlier. And I'm telling you, man, the thing just keeps on giving. I just don't understand how they put all that fantastic detail in there.
Yeah, you almost want to give them credit for inventing the Easter egg. As far as what we take for granted now in DVDs and certain film tricks and stuff, and really I guess you should probably go back to, was it Surratt with Sunday in the Park? I think he might be the first guy that kind of gave us that kind of detail in the background, where, you know, if you really look closely, there's more going on than whatever's in the forefront. But I really think, yeah, that is one of the great things about Watchmen, as you say, is suddenly you realize that Malcolm is at the newsstand beyond that you know, issue that he gets of issue 6, where he's, you know, studying Rorschach, or, you know, just always going back to the kid sitting in front of the newsstand and the newspaper vendor, and, you know, and also just the fact that you suddenly realize characters appear that, you know, are very important to the story, and they're kind of making their own appearances as well early on, and you don't realize that it's them until certain things are revealed. I've kind of probably already spoiled too much in terms of what I've said plot-wise, so I'll keep that part quiet for people maybe who haven't. Who don't know what we're talking about.
Malcolm actually shows up a lot, and you don't realize it. If you never saw The Absolute, did you ever see the recoloring?
I have. A friend of mine did buy the you know, the latest edition, and no, it looks great. But again, yeah, you know, I have the original issues, and I bought that same trade, I think, that you first saw back in the 80s.
Right.
And you know, those always kind of, you know, those satisfied me because, again, the story is just so great on its own. I've always just enjoyed kind of poring over it every couple of years and just enjoying the story again. That's the great thing about both of those guys, Gibbons and Moore. I think, you know, their reputations and body of work speak for themselves, but it does go back to that first idea between the two of them. And another thing, too, are you aware of that Superman annual that they made? Using the same kind of storytelling techniques in Watchmen, but it ended up being released before Watchmen, I think, came out. It was a Superman annual. It was called For the Man Who Has Everything.
I've heard the title. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
They made a Justice League animated episode about the main part of the story, which basically is an alien tricks Superman into getting, you know, kind of in a Venus flytrap sort of kind of plant trap. But it feeds his mind, his heart's desire, and he kind of visualizes what his life would have been like if Krypton hadn't exploded. And it's kind of this, you know, wish fulfillment story, or at least on the surface. But then you kind of see how interesting and difficult his life would have been, at least as far as the way things play out. And it is. It's this wonderful story. And again, it kind of has that same panel-to-panel storytelling sequencing that both made famous in The Watchmen. And it's right there. And again, it was almost a dress rehearsal. I always looked at it that way and asked Gibbons about that. It's amazing.
Did you make a motion comic out of it?
No, and you know, that was going to be my question, Jake. I mean, we know that Watchmen is doing well, and now Batman Black and White has come out, and there are chapters of
that.
Are there plans beyond Watchmen for you in terms of future motion comics with DC?
Maybe. That would be cool. I'll tell you, it's a ton of fun to do. It's really rewarding. And honestly, I'm having a hard time reading my comics that I'm just reading to read for pleasure, because my brain is starting to break out the layers and see them starting to animate, and if I can actually animate it.
Are there current stories right now that you would love to see animated that DC has put out? I'd like to see, I'll give you one, the Legion of Three Worlds that Geoff Johns is currently doing. I think would be a great story.
Yeah.
A lot of characters in there, but I think it'd be a lot of fun to see.
I've been hooked on Walking Dead.
Oh, that's great. Oh, fantastic. Kurtzman and Charlie Allard, two great creators. And so it's an amazing story.
Yeah, the thing that story did for me is it got me into, not waiting for the trade paperback anymore.
Oh, that's great.
I forget which one. It was the end of six. We were all frothing at the mouth going, okay, I can't wait, 4 or 6 months to see what happened. So I thought it was awesome that it kind of got us back to going back to the comic book store for an individual issue.
That's fantastic. What else have you read lately of comics that you like or would recommend?
Well, I haven't had a lot of time, but it's been very limited. I actually got the Absolute Edition of Sandman. So
great.
I have been rereading Sandman because I'm a huge fan. But it's kind of nice to kind of go back to that, and it's a very different experience.
Oh, definitely. That would make for an interesting motion comic.
Yeah, it would be, it's not traditional. Like that, so that's kind of what's so fascinating about Watchmen. It is very traditionally told, so mm-hmm. you can film it, but Sandman is like, the panel layout is all over
sure.
the place, And again, this is why, no one will ever be able to take the experience of actually reading Watchmen away, because things like panel layout and, even the way it's structured and organized, it's its own experience, that, you just kind of have to look at it and just study each page and kind of marvel at it. But, Sandman is a very different experience.
Tell me about the narrator, because, first of all, that's a tough job. I mean, even a good book on tape, you're really requiring an actor to play a lot of different roles. And I give him a lot of credit because I think he, does a good job personifying a lot of these characters. And, the only tough part is when the poor guy has to be a woman every now and then. So
right. No, the guy is a stud. Tom is amazing. So, a long time ago, it was decided, to sort of handle the voice as a narrator, and I love that idea because my mother, back when I was 8 years old, she read to me The Hobbit.
Okay.
And she recorded her voice and she read The Hobbit, and and she was she was doing a hobbit, a wizard, and 12 dwarves and, Gollum, and I ate it up. And, so my friends would they were like sending me books to give to my mother to read on tape.
Oh, that's great.
So I was really into the idea of it. And then, Zack Snyder, the movie director, he, I guess, had heard Tom doing, it was either Cormac McCarthy's The Road or No Country for Old Men.
Wow.
And basically they found him and got in contact with us and basically did a test, and he is awesome. And the crazy thing is, and this is the thing that sort of you guys, the people that listen to it don't get to experience, but he would swap from character to character without missing a single beat, and it was incredible.
That's cool.
Because he was doing scenes with the Minutemen and he would just again swap from character to character, female to male, and it was just awesome. In fact, he did the comedian soliloquy where he breaks down. He did that in one take.
Wow.
And he got really emotional, and all our hairs were standing on end. We're like, oh my God, that's great. Of course, when episode one came out, I think we were a little nervous because we're going, you know, Tom's doing all the voices, and people might not even realize, because he's so good at shifting characters, they might not realize that it's one person up until 18 minutes into episode one, until they hit Lori.
Yeah.
and of course, you know, people were kind of like, what the hell? You know, what's that? But, you know, and I mean, I got nervous, like, oh no, and I don't get, you know, don't weird out, like,
sure,
trust us, just hang with it, and you'll drop into him in the story. And I know that, you know, a long time ago, I had some Alan Moore radio drama, and where it's a political radio drama that he did, and he did all of the voices.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. It's that history of the CIA that he did. That history of the CIA that he did. Voice of the Fire. Yeah.
Yeah, and I had heard that a few years ago, and one of the guys that was working on the motion comic, he sent that around. He's a huge Alan Moore fan, and after I heard it, I was like, man, that was awesome. He's like, yeah, you know, Alan Moore did all the voices. I'm like, what? You know, so again, I thought that the concept of a single person was just a real good one. You know, Alan Moore did one himself, you know, did all the characters. And you know, I think after the next issues came out, episodes 2 and 3, that I think people did start to drop in. And then, you know, and if you don't drop in, then, you know, you don't drop in. But, you know, he's amazing.
No, I give him a lot of credit.
It's a real performance, you know what I'm saying?
Like, absolutely. As you say, it does feel seamless. And it doesn't surprise me that he is able to do this, changing characters and still keeping it all in one take. Continued success, because I think this is a really, like I said, it's a new medium, storytelling medium. And I give you a lot of credit for being the guy in the lab to make it happen, Jake Strider. So well done, man.
Thank you, John. Thank you. We're big fans of your show as well.
Animator Jake Hughes, the man behind the Watchmen motion comic. Don't forget that the motion comic is available in a season pass or issue by issue at iTunes. And as was reported earlier this week, the motion comic will be collected for a Blu-ray DVD release as well, and that will be happening on March 3rd, all in anticipation of the Watchmen film release, which of course is March 6th. This episode of Word Balloon has been brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where they offer a wide selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, original graphic novels, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All orders over $50 receive free shipping, and most discounts are 35% off. The Watchmen Trade Paperback. It retails for $19.99. You can get it at InStockTrades.com for $12.59. The hardcover edition retails at $39.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $25.19. Or the absolute edition retails for $75 and at InStockTrades.com, just $47.25. Don't forget about InStockTrades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com for all your pre-order monthly needs. For all the details, check out their websites, Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com, InStockTrades at InStockTrades.com. Thanks again for listening. Don't forget, you can always find us here at WordBalloon.com. And by all means, check out our archive, where you'll find well over 190 interviews with various comic creators. We're also at Newsarama.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, my handle is John Word Balloon. Or you can go to our forum at JinxWorld.com. And if you have any email questions about the show, you can reach me, John@WordBalloon.com. Thanks again for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.